Welcome back, everyone. Can you believe it? We're in episode 20 of this year already. Time has absolutely flown. Today, I'm super excited for the special guest that we have today. Chase Earle, who is the founder and CEO of Sports Talk ATL, is joining the show for an exclusive interview to talk about how Sports Talk ATL started, why he started it, and his thoughts on the Atlanta Braves and things like that. It's going to be super fun. I'm so excited, and I cannot wait for you all to hear it. You probably are already following him, but if you're not, as soon as you're done with this podcast, you want to go and follow Chase Earle on all things social media and follow Sports Talk ATL on all things social media. You will not be disappointed. Do that as soon as this podcast is over. And with that, let's get started. All right, so here we go. Chase Earle of Sports Talk ATO, founder and CEO, is going to join the show for this episode with this awesome interview that we had with him. I know that you're going to enjoy it. The stories that he tells are really cool about how Sports Talk ATL kind of formed and became the monster that it is today on social media and all the different platforms that it's on. It's a really cool story, and he has some really cool perspectives on this season's Atlanta Braves and what the future looks like. I'm so excited. Chase, thank you so much for joining the show. It's an absolute honor that you take time out of your busy schedule to get on the podcast and talk to my listeners and myself. I enjoyed every single second of this interview. And again, thank you so much for letting me join your team at Sports Talk ATL. It has been fun every single second that I've spent contributing to Sports Talk ATL. I've learned so much from you and the team at Sports Talk ATL. It's an absolute joy to be working and contributing to the Sports Talk ATL world. Well, again, thank you so much, and let's get started with this interview after a short break. Before we move on, I want to talk to you about a product that I am excited about. Fresh Prints of South Walton offers t-shirt printing services to businesses, sports teams, churches, charities, and many other clients locally and nationwide. I know for me personally, I'm not just pitching this because someone told me to. I use this service, and this company does a great job. They made shirts for myself and my family, and I still wear them to this day. They're located in South Walton County of Florida, but they offer free delivery service to local clients so they can focus on their business and not be out running errands, but they also will ship nationwide. Fresh Prints is devoted to offering high-quality, affordable screen printing services from small orders to large contract jobs. Keep your team looking fresh with Fresh Prints at www.freshprintsofsouthwalton.com. Chase, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. This is a huge honor to have you on the show. I'm excited for this interview, and I know the listeners are too.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty cool. And again, truly thanks, man, for the opportunity that you've given me to contribute to Sports Talk ATL. It's been an absolute blast, and I've truly learned a lot from you and Jake and the crew and how to further my skills as a writer and the type of, you know, content that people want to see and all that. And I'll always be thankful for that opportunity and the advice that you've given over.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's been good to have you on board. I love giving people like opportunities to write. Cause like, that's kind of how I started, you know, just started blogging away. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm not an English major. So everything that I've learned has kind of just come over the years of doing stuff like this.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So you're the founder and CEO of Sports Talk ATL. Can you tell us about that journey? Like, how did you get to this point in your career?
Well, I guess it started when I was like a sophomore in high school, or not high school, college, which was, I don't know, 2015. And I started the site, like just basically just looking for an opportunity to start writing. I didn't know how to get into the industry. I was a marketing major. I was a terrible English student, but I just wanted to talk about sports. So I started a Twitter, kind of started the blog, like while I was in college, wasn't something I was keeping too much into, but the Twitter kind of grew. And I think we ended up getting verified by the end of like my college thing, which I don't know, Twitter kind of just picks and choose who they verify. It's not, it's like random. Like you see Jake's verified and like, I'm not verified, but I own the site and everything. So it's just, they just like randomly pick like who gets verified. So I think when we got verified, that was kind of a cool moment. I was like, damn, maybe we could do this for real. But then when I graduated college, I was applying for a bunch of sales positions and I hated it. I was like, I don't want to do sales. And eventually I just told my dad, like, I'm moving to Atlanta and I'm just going to try to do it, you know, full time. At the time I wasn't making nearly enough money to do it full time. But I kind of think like when you're doing something that you love, if you kind of put some pressure on yourself, you know, sink or swim is what I kind of called it. You know, I'm either going to like move to Atlanta, I'm going to do this for a living, or, you know, if you put that kind of pressure on yourself, it makes it, gives you a bigger incentive to make it, you know? So I kind of just was like sink or swim. It's either going to work or not. I'll give myself a couple years. And eventually I got a few ad promoters like reach out to me and, you know, we started making it full time. I was able to start hiring people. And I think over like the last 2 or 3 years since I've been out of college is really when it's like grown a ton and I put a lot more time into it. So I think it kind of just started, evolved. Things have just kind of like hit me, you know, Bleacher Reports emailed me, getting verified, ad networks reaching out to me. It just is kind of all just, I feel like I learn a different thing every year. So it's been kind of a cool journey and it's all just kind of gotten grown and grown and grown.
Yeah, that's really cool. Especially all that stuff happening within, you know, 3 years is kind of relatively short time for all that to just evolve. So obviously you're doing something right, which is really cool. And it's encouraging for anyone that, you know, wants to follow in your footsteps, I would think. And that's a really cool story. And it's encouraging, I think. And the kind of sink or swim thing, sometimes I wish myself personally had that mentality more. I'm very like conservative with the decisions I make, and there can definitely be some cons to that sometimes. And so that's pretty cool. I love hearing success stories like that, and it's really encouraging.
Yeah, I think the industry, like journalism, media, is such a weird. It's probably the weirdest industry for people to try to get in. There's not like one way for you to do it. And I think from when I was starting to do it, like talking to people like Bob Rathburn, who are super, super easy to talk to and always willing to answer questions and stuff like that. It's kind of like, if you want to get into it, you just have to start doing all of it, you know, start podcasting, start writing, start, you know, reaching out to people to try to get interviews, and you kind of figure out what you're good at. And then you find that niche and then you just try to build off that. So, yeah, I mean, if there were any advice to give to people that are trying to get into stuff like this, it's, you know, do a little bit of everything, you know, find out what you're good at, talk to as many people as possible, make as many connections as possible, and, you know, good things will happen.
That's some really solid advice. Maybe I should charge for this episode.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just think, I do think that this industry is so weird to get into. I mean, I think anyone that is, you know, an aspiring college person or something that's trying to get into it, there's no like one way to do it. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I guess you could go for journalism, but I don't even think that's like always the best way to get involved into, you know, especially the sports media landscape. So it's a competitive, it's weird. And I just say, you know, try to make as many connections as possible and hope something good happens.
Yeah, some good advice. And I know that just the little bit of work I've been able to do, man, it's a blast. Yeah, my degree is not in journalism. I always grew up thinking I wanted to be a sports writer. When I saw how competitive, you know, when I was doing my research of what I wanted to do for a living, I realized, man, journalism, one, is hard to get into, but two, there's no like guaranteed money. Whereas like,
no,
maybe I want to try to, like I said, I'm super conservative on the decisions I make. Like, so I went a different route, but you know, finding stuff like this has just made like me able to turn a hobby into something that's just really fun. Just the fact that someone, just one person wanting to listen to this podcast or reading something that I've written, it kind of honestly makes it all worth it to me that someone actually wants to see what I have to say, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to, I remember when I think we got like 100 views on a blog post, like when I was a freshman or whatever, sophomore in college, like the first year. And like, we were like celebrating, you know, like, oh, look, 100 people read it. And, you know, now it's like, you get like 50,000 a day. So it's like, it changes. It all happens kind of fast. But that's how I was when I first started. I was literally like, oh my God, 15 people? Like, hell yeah. Ooh, we got 500. I mean, I still remember. I mean, and I celebrate every time, you know. It's like, first time I got 1,000 views in a day, first time 10,000, first time, you know, 50,000. And then I remember first time getting 1 million in a month. So like, I remember each milestone, like, and every time it still like amazes me that it was like, damn, like we really did that. So yeah, I mean, I was happy when 10 people were reading it. It's just been really fun. I'm super, super lucky and like blessed that like it's kind of turned out this way, but you know, I'm excited and it's just kind of probably what I'm going to do until I'm just, I don't know. I don't really see like an end. Like it just kind of, I'm just going to keep trying to grow it.
Well, I feel like you have the tools and the skills to do it. So that's good. And with the way the industry, I mean, just seeing how fast it blew up in 3 years tells me that there's plenty of potential for it to continue to keep doing this thing. I mean, that's so short. That's a short
time. Yeah, I mean, trying to get into other avenues. I know we really want to, I don't know. I'm always looking for good, you know, good people to like try to like help me take this thing to the next level and make it as big as possible. And, you know, it's like a game. Like it's been super fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you dabble in any other type of writing or anything before you started?
No. I actually, like, I have a conversation that I remember specifically with my English teacher my junior year of high school. And I wasn't a good high school student. I had a terrible GPA. Just wasn't really, like, into school at all. And I hated English. I hated writing. And I remember specifically her bitching at me one day. And I was like, listen, lady, I'm never going to write in my life. So just leave me alone. And then now look at me. I mean, so I always felt like I wanted to write her a letter one day because she was actually one of my favorite teachers. You know, she kind of enjoyed the banter. So when I was like, yeah, she's like, I bet you will end up writing more than you think. And I always wanted to like write her a letter like, hey, you know what? I write full time now. And like, it's kind of funny. It's ironic because I remember that conversation being like, I'll never write in my life. Like when I graduate from high school, I'm done writing. I'm never going to need to know how to do this. So I paid so little attention to English class when I first started writing. For the site, I didn't know like where commas and stuff went. So like I had to like teach myself like basically basic grammar rules when I like started getting serious about it and starting editing and stuff. I had to like teach myself basic grammar rules. Like, so it's kind of funny. Like it's just ironic the way that it all worked. But I didn't know how to do any of that when I first started the site.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's about as self-made as you can get. And I almost laughed when you started saying that because literally I had a question for you and listen to this question. And see how closely you just answered it without me even asking. I said, did you always know creating something like this was something you wanted to do? Or was it one of those things that you just realized one day that you just had the knack for it? I think you kind of.
I would say like I always wanted to like be involved in the industry. And I knew because like I was a marketing major, I had no journalistic experience and stuff like that, that I could never make it like the typical way. I couldn't make it by like going and like interning at like 6A to the Fan and then like, because I wasn't a journalist major and I got started too late into it. So I think I was like, I really want to be involved in this. The only way for me to do this is by doing it myself, you know, making the own site. So that was kind of like, I knew I wanted to be in sports in some way. Sports has always been my passion. I think if you talk to anyone that I know, they were like, yeah, you were destined to be something in sports, you know, in some field. But my, you know, degree or nothing lined up. And like I said, it's hard to get into the field. It's super competitive. It's not very high paying. So I just decided to start it myself. And that's definitely, it's probably the hardest way to go if you want to do it full time. But it's also, if you make it, the most fulfilling, the best. I mean, it's definitely better than working for anyone else, you know?
Right. So I think it's safe to say that a small part of you is proud that you kind of did it your own way and didn't follow the traditional path line?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's proud. I mean, I'm proud that we were able to make it what it is, but I just didn't really have a choice. And I'm just happy that I'm able to do something that I love. I think that's so important in life in general, you know, just finding something you love and going for it. And I'm happy that it worked out, because there were so many times, I mean, I was about to quit. I mean, probably 15 times where I was just like, you know, this isn't working. And I still remember the call from the ad company that called me, and they were like, yeah, we can like quadruple your revenue. And I was like, wait, so I can actually do this for a living? And like in literally 2 weeks, they had it done. And I was like, that was the happiest moment of my life. Cause I was like, damn, like that was when I realized, oh, like now I can do this. Now I can actually focus on this full time. Cause I was doing other stuff, you know, trying to pay rent, you know, working in restaurants, selling, you know, promotional products for my parents' company. So I was doing a lot of other things, like not just the site, but I was really working hard on to getting that full time. So that was a big moment.
Oh yeah. That's one of those moments you'll never forget, I'm sure. So with Sports Talk ATL being multi-sport, this has resulted in like multiple podcasts that you guys have done. Can you tell the listeners about these podcasts and what they can expect in case they want to listen to them?
Yeah. So, I mean, we haven't gotten all of them started. Like we haven't started the Braves one. And I think the Braves are our biggest, you know, viewership. I mean, they have the biggest fan base. Probably Falcons and Hawks, but Hawks are coming up. But we started the Falcons and the Hawks ones. The Falcons was Matt Caroli. And if you're from, you know, on Twitter, you know, he's pretty big on with the Falcons fans on Twitter. He's a good guy. With a couple other guys that work, Jake and Alex that work with me, they do the Falcons one. We do the Hawks one. It's kind of the off season. Obviously the season just ended. That one just started. And then we're going to be starting the Braves one here. Probably, I would say really soon. It's just the Braves have been so disappointing. It's almost tough for me to talk about. But
for sure.
But we're definitely going to get the Braves one. So, yeah, we'll have a Braves, Hawks, and Falcons all separate. We might be doing some other stuff. I know we're really trying to get into YouTube, getting some more video content in. Hopefully, eventually I'll hire, like, a content creator of sorts to, you know, really – push like some other avenues. I'm really trying to expand into other stuff, you know. I mean, obviously we got a good blog, but I want to get into the podcasting. I want to get into the videoing, YouTube, even other social media things. I mean,
I noticed Jake on TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, look at TikTok. I mean, just how much that's exploded.
Right.
And the thing about it, you have to just think like, okay, today it's TikTok and maybe we're a little late on TikTok, but in 2 years, it's going to be another talk. It's going to be some other, you know, social media app. So really kind of like keeping a layout of just how social media and stuff's growing, because if you could have gotten on TikTok early, I mean, you could have, I mean, and you could still do it, but you know, if you could have gotten there on there early, you could really, you know, make some serious cash. I mean, you see those 18-year-olds just dancing around making $5 million. So
right.
It definitely, there's definitely going to be more opportunities, and the way that the social media and the internet and stuff, I mean, it's really incredible. I mean, you can just watch these kids make millions of dollars doing anything. I mean, Twitching, YouTube, I mean, every social media platform is just like, I mean, it's my dad and my parents and the older generation, they don't even understand like how these people can make so much money. And that's what the internet's provided us, because you can reach so many more people than you ever could before. And these younger kids, I mean, I've done it to a degree, but the, you know, the people younger than me, they're starting to realize that. I mean, that's why you have these kids making millions of dollars before they're like 18 years old. And so the internet, I mean, it's just, it's a cash machine if you know how to use it correctly.
Right. So let's talk about your history as a fan. How did you end up being a fan of, you know, Atlanta sports in general or the Braves, or how did that happen?
So, I mean, I grew up in Marietta, lived here till I was 16. I was a diehard Georgia sports fan. I was a Georgia Bulldog, all Atlanta sports teams, diehard. Even the Hawks, when they were trash, diehard, had season tickets to the Braves. So, I mean, I've just always been a pretty much sports nut when it comes to and all Atlanta sports, and would argue with pretty much anyone about anything, whether I was right, whether I was wrong. But you know, I was always defending my team. So I was just a diehard psychotic sports fan, you know, just your typical guy, loving my teams. And I probably went to every playoff game that Atlanta has been in, like, for like growing up. I went to every Hawks playoff, I mean, home games, every Hawks, every Braves. So I was just a diehard Atlanta sports fan, diehard sports fan in general. So that's been me since I was, I pretty much came out of the womb. I mean, there's pictures of me in whitey tighties at 1 year old wearing a Falcons helmet. Like, I just, that's how I grew up.
Right. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I kind of envy people like you that live so close. I'm from Bay County, Florida. So growing up, the Braves were the closest team to us and they were on TBS, but I'm from Florida. The closest baseball team to me is, you know, 4.5 hours away. But hey, still,
well, that's how the Braves have such a big fan base compared to some of the other teams in Atlanta, is because they were on TBS. Mm-hmm. And you have fans from all over. And I mean, obviously outside of Florida, they're the only team in the South, so that helps. But yeah, that, I mean, the Braves fan base of all of them is spectacular. So
to me, they're still really the only team in the South.
Yeah, I don't count. Florida's not the South. They're like another country.
Yeah, and the Marlins, no one really – they don't really have many fans. The Rays, as good as they are, they don't have many fans unless you live right around Tampa.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So do you have any, like – you've been a fan for forever. So do you have any particular memories from the Braves that kind of stick out to you as, like, your favorite?
I mean, I would say it's been tough because – you know, I guess what our last one of that 14-year run was 2001, and I was still pretty young. So, I mean, I can't really recall any moments there where I was like absolutely, you know, filled with joy. I mean, the biggest moments to now, the biggest moments to me have been recently. Obviously, leading up to that 3-1 collapse. I mean, that was unbelievable. That was the best Braves run I've been a witness to. We won the World Series when I was born, 95, but can't really say anything about that. Right. The Ronald Acuna Grand Slam was unbelievable. But I mean, the Braves, as good as they've been, they've just been so disappointing in the playoffs for most of my career, or for most of my life. I mean, that was what, last year was the first divisional round we won in what, since 2001. And I think I was at that playoff series, that ALC or the NLCS versus the Diamondbacks in 2001, they ended up winning the World Series that year, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think Julio Franco hit a home run in a game that we won. That was cool. But yeah, it's been few and far between as far as moments in the playoffs for the Braves. It's just been disappointing like that. But they've always been good, which is nice.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because it's. Would you rather, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, would you rather have a World Series or would you rather be bad most of the time? Or would you rather be consistently above average like the Braves, you know? But
yeah, really, like the Marlins have 3 postseason appearances and 2 World Series.
Right.
And the Braves have 20 in that span and 1 World Series. Right. I think the answer is consistently good. I think I'd rather just be in it and involved in it. I mean, I kind of have like, maybe it's just the Atlanta in me, but I have like a sick, like, it's almost like all the pain that Atlanta sports fans have been through, all the losses, like when they finally do win it, it's going to be so gratifying that like, I don't even like care that much that they've gone through all that, because that win to me is going to be so much more important than any one of like those guys, those Boston guys who have won 25 championships since they've grown up, you know, when you think about all their teams, that one championship to Atlanta is going to be such a spectacle for the city that it's almost like I'm okay with it. Like I'm okay with it as long as like we get it before I die. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, since I've been alive, they haven't won. I mean, they won the World Series when I was 0 years old, but no Atlanta sports team in my lifetime has won. Thankfully, I have LSU. They got it done for me in 2019, but that's the only championship any of my teams have won. So it's I'm waiting for the one for Atlanta though, because that's right. The one that's important to me.
Right. Yeah, that's a really cool perspective. I like that. I whenever I think of the 14 division championships as a kid, I used to brag about it in a sense in my own mind, like, man, the Braves are so good. Growing up, they had 14, you know, division championships. But then you think about it, you're like, only one World Series in that span. That means they choked in 13 other ones.
Well, yeah, and they went to six, too. That's the craziest thing.
Right.
I think it was six, five or six, yeah. 96, 95, 2000, 99, 91, and 93. Yeah, they went to six, and they only won one.
Mm-hmm. And then I think the last one, they got swept, right, by the Yankees?
Yeah, they got swept by the Yankees, and then I think they lost the year before to the Yankees, too, like 4-2, four games to two. But, yeah, it's been a but yeah, like you said, I would rather have it that way than be the Marlins where you're just so trash 95% of the time because it's just not even fun. I mean, I think about those 2015 and 2016 Braves teams where it was just pretty dreadful, those lineups they were sending out. And if I had that for 10 straight years and then we finally just lucked up and won a World Series, I don't think that'd be much fun. I mean, that one World Series would be fun, but it's hard to keep a fan base engaged when you're that bad for 10 straight years.
I agree. Yeah, it makes sense why you like teams like the Kansas City Royals and teams like that don't really have a huge fan following, even though they're really, really good for like 3 years. Sorry, my phone's going off because Freddie Freeman just hit a home run.
Did he? That's awesome. What's the score now? 3-1 or something or 2-1?
Yeah. I'm sure there's never anyone on base for Freddie Freeman.
You saw they put Dansby up to second today.
Yeah, I was looking at his stats earlier today. This year his on base percentage is less than 300, and they slotted him all the way up to number two spot. Doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the Braves are in such a weird. I mean, Dansby has been hot of late. I think the last like 2 or 3 weeks he's been pretty hot. But yeah, they're just the lineup is just such a mess right now. But, I mean, if you want to talk – I was thinking about it today and, like, just thinking about the trade deadline. If they can somehow, like, stay afloat with, you know, Yanoah and Darnold coming back, I really think this team, like, up and down the roster with the improvements from, like, Riley. You obviously have Freddie and Ozzie. Jock Peterson's a decent replacement for Acuna. If they can make a trade for a bullpen, like an actual closer – that will take so much pressure off all these other guys. Like if you can just move everyone down, like I know, you know, it seems like the Braves need like 10 relievers, but if you could just get one ninth inning guy that you can trust a little more, it takes so much pressure off Chris Martin, Tyler Matzek, AJ Minter, you know, Luke Jackson, you know, when Will Smith's the 8-inning guy, and then you have a bunch of guys you can throw out there for the 7th. I don't think the Braves are as far away as it looks. Like, they just need to get healthy and stay afloat for the next couple of weeks. If they can do that, I mean, they got a shot. I mean, the Mets are so injured, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets ended 500 at the end of this season. Like, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. So if you look at it that way, you know, let's assume they end to 500. You know, the Braves are 2 games under 500. I mean, they can turn this around. It's not that crazy. And then once you get in the playoffs, it's a crapshoot. I mean, look at the Dodgers. I mean, they're getting injured left and right. There's nothing certain. So I know people are just kind of ready to give up on the season, but I look at the rotation being so much better than it was last year, especially with the Yanoahs, Anderson, Morton's really come around, even Smiley, Mueller, Davidson. You have all this depth. They have so many guys they can throw out there. They can just get in the playoffs. Like, I don't really – like, they have just as good a shot as anyone. So it looks bad right now, but get a ninth inning guy. Give me a left fielder to replace Almonte. And see what you can do.
Yeah, that was you already answered a bunch of questions I had for you, which is really cool. to tag on to that, yeah, I think that's a really solid strategy because it really is odd how last year the weakness was the rotation and the strength was the bullpen, and now it's flopped. Like I think DOB posted something that since like the middle of June, the Braves have had their rotation has the best ERA in the majors. And a lot of that's due to Drew Smiley. I mean, his first 8 starts, he gave up 13 home runs. And then the last 8 starts, he's only given up 4. So
And Morton's been great. And Yanoah is coming back. And Mueller's been really good. Davidson's obviously on the 60-day IL, but I mean, you just have so much starting pitching. Even Bryce Wilson has come up and had a couple of good starts. We just haven't really needed him. They have so much starting pitching compared to last year. And it, like, I think you can definitely agree with this. It's 10 times easier to fix your bullpen at the trade deadline. I mean, they can make a couple trades for relievers by giving away barely any. They don't have to give up a top 15 prospect, probably.
Right. Yeah, just and like they gave up for Shane Green. It was hardly anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I liked Wentz, but, you know, and then Melanson, I mean, they basically just ate his contract. They gave, I think, Trevor, was it Beck that they gave in that trade? It was like a 25 ranked prospect, and then Colby Allard, who hasn't really done much. They got Chris Martin, so I mean, they can fix the bullpen pretty easily, and that rotation's so much better that it just sucks that you lose Acuna. That's really, I mean, it does. Like you can do all these mental gymnastics to think it, but it's like, how do you replace that? No, the thing is, you can't replace that. Jock is about as good as they're gonna get without really trading some big prospects. And I think you can also agree with this. I don't see the Braves, given the position they're in, making any blockbuster deals. I think it's going to be really just trying to piece together a roster that has a chance at making the playoffs. And then if you anything can happen once you make the playoffs. So I think that's kind of the direction. They'll help out their bullpen as long as they don't go on a huge losing streak. And I think they'll get an outfield bat. They have to. I mean, Almonte can't be playing every day. That can't happen.
No, he's a DH. At a minimum, I mean, at maximum, his defense is, his defensive metrics are absolutely terrible. I mean, I'm like, I've said this before, I'm thankful for him because imagine how bad it would be if they didn't make that signing, you know? But they could have done better, but if they hadn't brought him on, what I was really hoping for was maybe like a platoon with Arcia and Jock Peterson out there. But for whatever reason, Jock Peterson's splits have flipped this year. Last in his career, he was terrible against left-handed pitchers and killed righties. This year, he can't hit righties and he's killing lefties. So it's not.
I didn't even know that, but yeah, he's always been a platoon guy, kind of over his, or you know, at least I guess he kind of went from like all-star to platoon guy. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously gonna have to play every day for us. We don't really have a choice. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of pretty good outfield options. I know you've gone over a few of them. I've gone over some. Kind of depends what they want to give up, but I mean, I know Castellanos is going to go somewhere. I mean, the Reds aren't in it. They'll probably throw him somewhere. Starling Marte, he's a free agent after this year, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I guess it kind of depends. I know you've kind of written about it, but I feel like you have to get guys that are here past this year. Right. If you really want to make any mm-hmm. give any significant prospect capital up, because you just can't put enough faith into this year when you don't have Acuna, you don't have Soroka, you know, so, and you're 4.5 games back.
Right. And it's almost guaranteed, even without any additions, next year's team, if they re-sign Freddie Freeman, next year's team, when healthy, is going to be extremely better than this year's team. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be better than 2020's team. I mean, I think if you look at the Austin Riley, what he's been able to do, and just the consistency over his last, I wrote something about it that I'm going to post tomorrow, but 76 games, he's hitting .295 over his last 76 games with all 15 of his homers. And you like with an .895 OPS. I mean, that's so much better than the Austin Riley that we've seen in any of these other lineups. And, you know, you replace Ender and Ciarte. I mean, dude, Heredia is a significant upgrade for offensively. Then Ciarte, Ronald Acuna comes back, Ozzy, Freddie. We'll see what happens with Dansby. Hopefully he can turn it around. I've always been a big Dansby guy, but this year's definitely made me frustrated. We'll see what happens there. But, I mean, even if Dansby's your seventh worst hitter, it's not that bad of a line.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he's at least proven that he can hit, you know, 25 homers a year, which still has some value, especially at shortstop. So, yeah, I mean, this lineup – and then the rotation, I mean, I don't know how you can't be excited about Davidson, Mueller, Yanoa, even Soroka when he comes back, Freed. You know, they have so much youth. And I mean, look, Tukey's pitching well today. Hopefully that's sustainable. I still got faith in Bryce Wilson. So they still have so much pitching, so much youth. I mean, they're going to be good for a while. And, I mean, this year sucks. I think that's why this year sucks so much, because they have all this talent.
Right. You know how good they can be.
Yeah, and it just they've blown it with bullpens. They've gotten injured. Marcell Ozuna, who knows what the hell is going to happen there. So it's really just been a crazy ass year. The fact that they're 500 is pretty nuts.
Right. It's really crazy. And one thing I was looking at that I thought was really interesting too is that a lot of people are talking about how weak the National League East is and talking about the 500 thing. I probably looked at it about 2 weeks ago. All the teams in the National League East were within one game of being 500 against the National League East. So all five teams are within 500 against their own division. So the division is so even. Like when they play each other.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just been like back and forth. I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I feel like the Mets, the Nationals, and the Braves, and the Phillies have all kind of just split each other, and the Marlins even. Right. Because I know we got swept by them. I think in their first series or whatever. So we've been kind of battling back from that. But yeah, no, I pretty much stole. And I think I've written about this many times over the years that the thing that the Braves have dominated in their last three seasons has been the division. I mean, absolutely walloped the Phillies, walloped the Mets, and walloped the Marlins. I mean, killed the Marlins, poor guys. I mean, they lose 15 times a year to the Braves over the last three seasons. I mean, seriously, I think they've won a total of like 10 or 15 games over the last 3 years against the Braves. So yeah, I mean, the Braves have owned the division, and that just hasn't been the case for obviously a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and it's huge. And it also makes you wonder, like, okay, so what about the National League Central with, like, the Brewers? Are they really that good? Or is it that they're just the rest of their division?
I think most of all those teams, I mean, Pirates, Cardinals, Reds, I mean, none of those teams are above 500, I don't believe. Obviously, the West is good, but then the West has, you know, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, who are basically a free three wins every time you meet up with them.
Right.
So, you know, the Giants are playing out of their minds. So I don't get to watch them. I don't know how they've gotten so good, but we'll see if it's sustainable.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't put a lot of faith in run differential, especially seeing how the Braves scored. Like at one point they had scored 21% of their runs and only six.
Yeah, yeah.
But based on run differential, the Giants have gotten a bit lucky. And so I don't foresee them winning the division.
It's hard for me to see them winning the division when the Dodgers are in there. I still think the Dodgers are the class of the MLB.
Oh yeah, I mean the insane depth they have is gonna.
Yeah, I mean the fact that they can just like have Trevor Bauer take an indefinite leave, and who knows if he's gonna come back. That whole situation's weird. I don't know if you've read that story, but whatever. I mean, it's almost like they can. I mean, when they got Trevor Bauer, it was a luxury. I mean, they already won the World Series without him.
Right.
So I mean, yeah, it's insane that TV deal they have. They're able to do it because they're just making, you know, $500 million or whatever a year just from TV. So good for them. It sucks. You wish the Braves could do that. I mean, if you just looked at how close the series was last year and then the payroll differentials, it's almost absurd that it's that close. But because the Braves have just done a great job. That's the other thing about the Dodgers, though, is they do such a great job of developing from within as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, go out and get a star. They do what the Braves do, develop all that talent from within, and then they go add those big stars, and it's hard to beat. But you know, they only have one World Series, so
yeah, that's true. But back onto that, I mean, just the talent they've developed, and a lot of them weren't even first round picks, like Cody Bellinger, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they. I mean, it seems like they have top prospects again after again, and then the guys that they don't, you know, completely developed, they're trading away for Manny Machado and Mookie Betts and
right.
all these other guys. So I mean, it's what they've been able to do is unbelievable. They're easily their heads and toes are I feel ahead of everyone, every other organization right now. They've just been so good for the last decade plus. Right. So credit to them. They're pretty much World Series favorites every year, and yeah. They deserve to be.
Yeah, I think last year the two teams that were in the World Series are the two best run organizations in baseball. And that's why they were there.
Tampa, what Tampa's able to do with their payroll is incredible. The moves that they make, the way that they flip guys at the right time to replenish their farm and, you know, keep good guys coming up. I mean, it helps when the Pirates trade for Chris Archer or whatever. It helps when they give yeah. you know, literally a half a squad for Chris Archer, who hasn't done anything since. But but it's been everything. They've made a lot of good moves, and the way that they're able to stay so competitive with such a small payroll is pretty incredible.
It truly is. So I try to ask all my guests this, and there's no wrong answer here. So I don't want to preface it with anything, because I want to get your true opinion. What do you think about, you know, we were just talking about the Rays and the Dodgers. What is your thought on analytics in baseball? It's a broad question, but I just kind of want to get your thoughts on analytics.
I mean, like, I like them. I mean, I think they've obviously played their part. I do think, like, I would say a lot of the times you should go with analytics. I mean, the reason they're there, I think this is about in every sport. I mean, I think that, you know, trend, I mean, just look at the way college offenses have opened up. And, you know, look at Alabama. I mean, adapt or, you know, go extinct. That's really like how sports are. You can see it in college football a ton. I will say, like, there were, like, for example, the Braves last year in the NLCS, there are a lot of moments where the analytics tell you not to bunt. The analytics tell you, you know, not to do this, you know, ignore the shift and, you know, try to hit a home run, blah, blah, blah. But you saw the Dodgers do the little things against the Braves, you know, make a bunt, you know, slap one through the shift the other way, stuff like that. That the Braves just didn't do. And the Braves had so many opportunities over those three games that they lost where, you know, they could have just bunted. They could have just slapped one through the shift. You know, they're giving you a free single. Like, and I know it says the analytics say, oh, hit a bomb, you know, ignore the shift, you know, don't try to slap one the other way. But I think those moments, things change. So I do think there's a feel part of it that still exists. I think that in every sport, and especially baseball. And I think, you know, if Brian Snicker had to redo, you know, the NLCS, I think there were several moments where he would have bunted, several moments where he would have, you know, given the hitter like, hey, slap that thing the other way, you know, play small ball, like get a run across, you know, this is the two best, you know, this is the best pitching team in the league, you know. So I analytics obviously have their place, but I do think there's a feel aspect to it. And I think, you know, sometimes that gets lost in the playoffs. And, you know, I think you see a Dodgers team, probably they've learned from their mistakes in the past where they did the small things and that, and that's why they were able to, you know, beat the Braves in those close games.
That was a good answer. Not that you needed my approval, but I that was pretty awesome. It's funny because I talked to someone else recently and they had almost the exact same answer of how it's kind of like analytics are good, but essentially it's important that there's a mixture of the human element of making decisions in the right moment. And I agree.
Yeah, I mean, pressure, like if you have to take into account the pressure of the moment, and just stuff like that and who you're facing. I mean, you're facing a Dodgers pitching staff that, you know, people are hitting, you know, 220 against. It's a little bit different, you know, take what they give you, you know, get the runners your second, third with one out. You're guaranteed almost a run from there, and you're most likely going to get two. So, I mean, I just think, you know, there's definitely some moments, especially, you know, under pressure where you got to make those decisions. And that's really a feel thing. And that's where I think the managers in baseball, I don't think they have to do very much. They have to kind of feel out those moments and they have to make good bullpen decisions. If they do that, you know, your job's pretty safe.
Yeah, man, if only we had a good bullpen and good bullpen management.
I mean, I don't know what to do about that, man. It's just, it drives me crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's rough because it's like, oh, well, why didn't you put in Chris Martin there? You put in Chris Martin. They light him up. Well, why didn't you put Jackson in there? Light him up, you know?
See, I don't love Brian Snicker. I think he made some bad decisions in the NLCS. That happens, though. I think, obviously, he's managed the bullpen bad at times throughout his career, but I think everyone does that. I'm not the guy on the Twitter that's always like going at his head. There has been times where like I've been pissed off at him, but I just think, I don't know, in general I think he's very good at getting the guys together and stuff like that. I just think his in-game decisions for his entire tenure have been kind of questionable to me, and maybe that's something he gets better, but I mean, like a lot of people who've been fans of the team, Bobby Cox had a lot of trouble with that stuff too. You know, we'd win 100 games and we can't win a playoff series. I mean, there's a reason for that. You know, like some manage, you know, there was definitely some managing mistakes. You know, if Twitter was around when Bobby was coaching, you know, people would have wanted his head. My uncle to this day will go on a 30-minute rant with about 47 F-bombs about how Bobby Cox was the most overrated coach of all time. So, you know, this is not something new. This is not something new. I think Brian Snicker and Bobby Cox are pretty similar. That's kind of the Braves. That's kind of how they roll. Like, they always kind of hire from within, you know, get a guy that they're familiar with, and you know, it's comfortable. We'll see how long Brian Snicker makes out. I don't think they're going to fire him. They gave him an extension 2 years last offseason. And I think with all the injuries, there's no way they're going to like make a move. So we'll see. We're stuck with them. So
yeah, it's true. And I was a fan of him back when he took over as an interim manager, just simply because the Braves were last in the league in offense. And then when he took over, they, for the second half of the season, they were the second best offense in the league. And ever since then, he gained my respect. But I've said this so many times this year, it is making me really – it's really hard not to get super mad this year. And I know you can only play with what you have, but you can't blame all 22 losses on the bullpen, on just the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, they've just been weird decisions. I mean, how is A.J. Minter getting in one-run ball games still? I know we just demoted him, but how was that still happening? And I think everyone and their mother that's watched this team all season, when he comes in a high-leverage situation, is pulling their hair out. Like, they know what's going to happen, and every time it did. And especially, you know, you look, I pointed out his home and road splits, where he has an 8.22 ERA on the road. And it's even worse. He's given up 18 runs in 15 innings at home. So, like, why is he coming in high leverage situations at home? Like, it's obvious. We know AJ Minter's a head case. Like, we know it's not his stuff. Like, he has some of the nastiest stuff you could possibly give a human being. You know, it's in his head. It's his control. He loses it. You know, if he gives, it's almost like he gives up a base runner and he just totally loses control. I mean, he'll get two outs, walk a guy, and then it's just like a guy doesn't know how to throw a strike. And it's frustrating because he has so much talent, but it's even more frustrating when you keep putting him in there in those high leverage, high pressure situations when he's been crumbling and he's already a mental head case. Like, we all know this. So it's like, yes, I agree. Like, everyone's been choking on the Braves bullpen. But if you keep sending AJ Minter out there, like, I can't defend you as a manager. Like, right. You know, yeah. Like, give me anybody. Like, I don't care what they have to do. I mean, if Brian Snicker has to go to Anthopoulos and say, hey, I don't know. I don't know. But give me anybody but AJ Minter. I do think it'd be interesting to see how they're going to handle all these arms when, like, Yanoa comes back and Kyle Muller, if he's still pitching well, and you have Drew Smyly pitching well. I mean, you got to send one of them to the bullpen, right? Mm-hmm. Tuki DeSant, maybe he goes to the bullpen. I think Yanoa could be a great late inning relief guy if you wanted to trust him. So I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to do something like that, especially like since Yanoa is going to have to be stretched out for a long time if they want to make him a starter again, and who knows when he's going to be ready. So it might be better off to, you know, if you have five good starters already, try Yanoa out of the bullpen as like a late inning relief guy, especially from the right side. Lord knows the Braves need a right handed reliever. So they got some options.
He's got two pitches, which is good and which is fine as a reliever.
I mean, and he's throwing 100 and he snaps off one of the nastiest sliders in baseball. I mean, that's what you want out of like a closer, pretty much.
Right.
So I actually think he could. I wrote about a while ago that when he comes back, I think they might want to try him out of the bullpen. Just like if they're still in it.
Right. Yeah, and then if they do make the playoffs, that depth of starters, they can move them to the bullpen without worrying about anything.
And when things get tight with a Drew Smyly in the third inning, you can put Yanoa in. You know, you can put Muller in. It's a total different game in the playoffs. So I just hope they can stay afloat over these next 2 weeks because they obviously hit the road for 8 games with the Philly and – they have these three versus San Diego, and they have Philly and the Mets. That'll tell you. If they can't stay afloat, if they can't win, go 4-4 on the road, they're probably not going to be able to buy anything, like justify buying at the deadline. So
right.
I'm hopeful, but these 2 weeks will decide it.
Yeah, it's which makes every single game that much more stressful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready to. I don't know what the score is right now. Hopefully they're winning, but let's see what they got. 2-1 still. Tuki Desant's thrown 6 2/3 so far.
First start back. That's crazy.
I guess a one run ball. Let's see how many hits he's given up. 2 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. Wow.
That's encouraging. I mean,
but yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. If there's anything encouraging, it's like a lot of these young guys, these young arms kind of look like they could be legit.
Right.
You know, Davidson, Moeller, Toussaint, you know, 4 guys right there. If 2 of those guys end up being pieces of your rotation, you're set.
Right. And then Ian Anderson's still got years before he gets past arbitration.
Yeah. Process. I mean, then you obviously have Soroka and Freed. Hopefully Soroka. God bless that man. I still want to know what the hell happened to his Achilles. I don't know if you read that, but I talked to like a doctor about it, about his Achilles. And he was just kind of like, the odds of a re-tear are like 1%. You know, not like, you know, just like, and he said he's never heard of a re-tear from just walking. So, like, it's like, he got the surgery from the same guy. So, I assume it couldn't have been, you know, some bad surgery, but either it was just a freak accident or, you know, something went wrong. But he kind of was like, yeah, there's probably more to that story. So, maybe we learn about something. Who knows? But I feel so bad for that guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's losing out on a ton of money, too. Because of this.
Yeah, I mean, and he's just a class act all the way around, from
right
the way he carries himself, from, you know, his professionalism, from his composure. I mean, he's been one of the most impressive young arms. I mean, you just don't see, yeah, arms are so, you know, hit or miss. They go through head cases. They're so hard to develop. And Soroka is just one of those rare cases where he was just a mental giant. I mean, he just was the opposite of a mental midget. Nothing fazed him from the moment he stepped on the major league field. I think he threw like 6 innings of one run ball against the Mets in his debut. I mean, and then his first playoff outing, he throws like 7 innings of one run ball. I mean, he's just been unfazed by anything. So, you know, he obviously works hard, and it just sucks so bad for him for that to happen.
It does. So let's, in case the listeners have not made it to Sports Talk ATL yet, which I'm sure they have, but if they haven't, could you let them know more about what Sports Talk ATL is all about, what it is, and all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a group of diehard. I'm not going to say everyone's a diehard Atlanta sports fan, because some of the guys that write aren't technically Atlanta sports fans, but that's how it got started, diehard Atlanta sports fans, kind of giving our own opinions. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like what you're going to find at The Athletic is from a journalistic perspective, but – you know, it's just guys who love the team, giving their opinions, giving their ideas, just like me and you. I mean, think about it as just as a reader, you know, talking, having a conversation with another diehard Braves fan. That's kind of my goal with the site. And obviously we cover the Falcons and the Hawks, and we do some college football stuff. We do some specials. And then like I said earlier, you know, we're trying to expand into a lot of areas. So If you haven't read the site, sportstalkatl.com, sportstalkatl on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, we're all over the place, and we're just gonna, you know, keep growing and keep talking Atlanta sports.
Awesome. So, what about you personally? Where can they find you on Twitter or social media?
I just created a individual Twitter a couple months ago, but it's Sports Talk Chase. It's Sports Talk Chase, I think, is the name. And then at Earl, my last name, IRLE. I know that's weird. IRLE Chase is the at. So it's at Earl Chase, which is my last name, my first name.
Awesome. And I can attest that it is a great follow. That's one of the reasons, well, one of the many reasons I wanted to bring Chase on here is so that I can introduce you all to his Twitter account, because it's a good follow. I have it set on my notifications so I can see when all you guys post stuff. I mean, especially like, for example, I've not been a big NBA fan for a while, just simply because I grew up playing basketball, and it's not anything against the NBA. It's just no one in my group of people watches the NBA. So when I'm literally the only one that pays attention to it, and I'm not, and you know, from Florida, I mean, who am I going to watch? you know, so I've kind of fallen off other than the Hawks. And then I've seen with you guys, the way you guys covered the Hawks this past off season made me really pay attention to NBA. I was paying attention to the NBA again because of the Hawks and because of the updates you guys were making. And so what I'm getting at is if you follow Sports Talk ATL, follow Chase, follow Jake, all those guys at Sports Talk ATL on Twitter, and you won't regret it. So, yeah, so I just want to say again, thank you so much for joining the podcast, and thank you so much for letting me write for you guys. I've learned so much, and I've enjoyed every second of it. So I just want to say thank you, and thanks for letting me be part of Sports Talk ATL. Thanks for joining the podcast. You took a shot on me, and I'll forever be grateful.
And no, man, it's been fun working with you, and I enjoyed the podcast. And, you know, anytime, you know, I'll come back on. It's fun.
Yeah, that would be great for sure. Always looking for great knowledge to join the you have today, and you've given some really good insights. I've enjoyed this, and so I know for a fact that the listeners will enjoy it. So, yeah, man. So thank you. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Thanks again, Chase, so much for joining the podcast. That was an absolute blast. I learned so much and I enjoyed every second of it. I'm sure if you're willing that I would love to have you back in the future sometime. I hope that some of the predictions you made about the Braves, if they do certain things right, that they might be able to stay afloat and make it to the playoffs, and anything can happen. I definitely trust your judgment, and again, thank you so much. This was a blast. Everyone go check him out on Sports Talk ATL, all over social media. You will not regret it. You'll enjoy the follow, and you will be glad you did. So thanks again so much, Chase, and we'll talk to you later. That's the show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, wherever you get your podcasts to get the show further out there for people that might not know it doesn't exist. Because of you all, the show was the number one show on Good Pods for a while. It's still the number one sports show on Good Pods, and it's all because of you. I cannot thank you enough. Thank you again for voting for me for Best of Bay, being a finalist of Best of Bay. The show is taking off, and it's all because of you, and I cannot thank you enough. Thank you, Chase, again. You can follow the show at Braves Dugout Pod on Twitter. You can email the show for any business inquiries, bravesdugout@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Facebook or our website. All this will be in the show notes so you can know where to find it. Thank you so much, and as always, go Braves.